come to some sort of an agreement. It happened over the weekend, you know, a little after 9 o'clock it was on Saturday night, and that's when Kevin McCarthy spoke. Didn't give you a lot, but we saw some of the components yesterday of this agreement here to discuss on a quick turnaround for Marty Cantor and us, as we're always glad to have him back, as far as the director of Associate Activity Economic-wise here on Long Island. I'm going to think about that for just a half a second. As we welcome back Mr. Cantor. Sir, how are you?
I'm great today. How are you, Jay?
So, you know, word came through. We caught it. Pleasantly surprised I was. I didn't think it would happen, you know, that late. Weekend and everything else, but, you know, who knows? But in essence, there is a deal, and now the vote comes and everything else. Give me a Dr. Marty Cantor assessment of what you had read.
Well, first of all, I think it's a good deal. I think the House Speaker got as much out of it as he could. There was always going to be a deal. Joe Biden was never going to want to run for president, being the second one to have a default on government securities and government debt. The good news is, with dealing with inflation and everything, the budget just couldn't go up. I mean, part of the big problem with this inflation is the federal deficit that we keep on encountering every year. Part of that is about $5 trillion of that is the debt that was issued during COVID. And so there just had to be a clawback on some of the spending. We couldn't raise taxes. You don't raise taxes in a bad economic downturn. Herbert Hoover proved that. So you just don't do that. So it was a good deal. I think the fact that it's holding spending at the current level for 2024 while increasing defense spending and spending for the veterans, very important. And it keeps spending at 1% increase for 2025. And if we have inflation of 2%, which is the benchmark, that means it's actually going to be a cut in federal spending, which is also very good because we got to get this deficit under control. If you don't get deficit under control, we're going to keep on borrowing. And that puts tremendous pressure on interest rates in the overall economy. So I think it was a good deal. You know, nobody blinked. They just wanted to get it done. Both the House Speaker and the President wanted to get this done. The other thing that's going to happen is that the fringes in the Congress, the progressives, are already screaming that they haven't been raising taxes and spending, and the conservatives are saying, "Well, we haven't cut enough." So what that means is this is going to pass the House with Democrat and Republican support. And the fringes, the left wing and the right wing, going to vote against it. So it's going to take the balance of Republicans and Democrats in the House to pass.
You know, I look at it like, and by the way, you know, I give a lot of credit to McCarthy. I mean, you know, the withstanding of the 15 votes back in the day for him to even get to where he is at this point in time. You know, you kind of got a little feel of resiliency for him, and he certainly held up to that standard, Marty, with his deal. You know, listen, you hold the line on spending in the first couple of years, and it sets up for, you know, somewhat of a continuance success-wise because it ties some of the future baseline stuff, some of the spending numbers, which can be a little difficult when you think about it as far as alterations and everything else, to at least to the near-term numbers. And it also kind of gives you some safeguards in case spending climbs above some of these caps going forward, right? Talking about these budget caps, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it basically pushes everything off until after the next presidential election, which I think was an imperative for President Biden. You don't want to be talking about debt limits and spending cuts and things like that during a presidential election. So this really puts everything off until the 2026 budget, which will then be renegotiated. So it brings, you know, after the, well, for me, just looking at it as a citizen of the country, after all those tumultuous years between Pelosi and Trump, it was refreshing not to have nastiness and name-calling between the House Speaker and the President.
Tell you what, if for one shining moment, right, at the old NCAA tournament, CBS days when tournaments were concluded, you know, it kind of gave you a sense of unity. Where you have two sides who hate each other, but you have a president and a speaker who never were on the same page, and knew what was at stake. You know, either you get this thing under control, or guess what? All hell breaks loose. And that's what could happen in the next week or so. But, you know, you kind of got a sense. You know, you put everything aside and everything else. See, this is how you accomplish things from party lines. One side
wonderful.
Against the other. All it takes is a little bit of civility, right?
Yeah, it was wonderful to see government work, and also to be civil. I think everybody was just fed up with all the nastiness of the past, the past Congress, and so this is. I mean, it's not to say that that the progressives and the conservatives aren't going to come out and be nasty, but at least between the leaders of and remember, McCarthy is the second in line to the president after the vice president.
Right.
In succession. So you had major players sitting down and I give credit both to McCarthy and the president for keeping it civil.
Marty Cannon with us, deciphering the debt ceiling deal signings tomorrow. They're scheduled. Speaking of that, Marty, not to get too political with you, there is some pushback on the GOP side. They might not get all the 10 votes. How do you think that'll play into this thing tomorrow?
What do you mean? You're talking about the Senate?
Yeah,
the Senate. That's going to be a difficult thing. I mean, you've got to get, you've got to get at least, they're talking about all 100 senators, but you got to get at least 60 to vote, to say they want to support it so you avoid the filibuster. And I hope that, I have a feeling on the Democratic side, and the Republican side, you've got Leader Schumer and the Minority Leader McConnell. I think they're going to be able to bring in enough votes because certainly Schumer doesn't want to embarrass the president. And I cannot believe for a minute that Schumer wasn't briefed along the way. Remember, the original negotiations included the Senate, Schumer and McConnell. In the White House, and they haven't been involved now. They're just waiting to see what the House does. But I think they'll get enough votes. It would be a terrible embarrassment politically for the president if he can't bring along the votes. And the other side, there is an economic consequence if this thing doesn't get passed because there are disability payments, veterans payments ready to go out. Now, and a week from now, you got Social Security. You've got employees who are of the federal government who will not get paid. And then look, if there's a downgrade on the federal debt, that just increases the interest rate. Plus, what that will also do is all those banks that are holding Treasury bills, the ones that have been insolvent, some on the cusp of it, if the interest rates go up, then their value of their T-bills, their holding in reserve, goes down. So if there's a run on the bank, they don't have enough money to cash out. So this has tremendous ramifications throughout the economy. So it is good. I mean, I recall what Robert Kennedy called compromise, sacrificing what's important to preserve what's essential. And I think what's essential is that, we don't have a default.
Kenner on the debt ceiling. The biggest thing of it all for me was if you're cutting the recklessness of Washington by 25%, guess what? It's an unbelievable deal. And that's what it is. The spending reductions of a little more than $2 trillion over the next 6 years, relative to the pre-agreement baseline, by the way, I mean, that cuts spending money by a quarter. I mean, by 25%.
Huge. Yeah, and spending had to be cut. It had to be cut. The deficit has to be cut. The pressure on borrowing and interest rates. Remember, when you have a deficit and you're issuing federal debt to cover the deficit, what you're doing is you're removing private sector capital to pay down that debt. And private sector capital is critical for investment in this economy. So you're really reducing the investment capability of the private sector, and you need private sector investment in order to increase the gross domestic product to a non-inflationary level. So this does a lot of really good things. Cutting spending was so essential, and I'm glad to see that they did it. Because we can't keep on taxing and spending and debting and spending, because it's tough enough for households to balance their budgets without having to deal with inflation. Inflation is a tax on everybody, but especially the middle class and the poor. So you've got to get rid of the inflation, and you've got to start getting as close to balancing budgets as you can, or reducing the deficit. We just can't keep on spending and borrowing and taxing and spending.
The only negative for me, Marty, was this whole IRS deal. You know, I mean, I always remember McCarthy stating the case regarding the very first bill to repeal will be the funding for those 87,000 or so agents. Really, that was a point for me, and I didn't see much, regarding that. But, that one deal breaker should have been his promise to defund this massive $80 billion or so not to get too political with you again, already weaponized IRS. You'd like to see something there. You didn't get it.
Well, part of that money was to increase the technology of the IRS, and clearly you needed that. They're now developing software that people can file their taxes without going to an accountant, or without buying software from Intuit or those places. The other thing, part of those 87,000 agents are replacing the ones who are retiring. And the other thing is, part of those agents are going to be the ones answering the phone calls for taxpayers' questions. And we know that has been woefully inadequate over the years. You call the IRS, you're waiting for an hour to speak to somebody, and hopefully they'll give you the answer. In terms of enforcement agents, there are a lot of bad players out there not paying their fair share. I wouldn't want to weaponize the IRS. That's not what it was there for. But, we're now seeing the fraud in that payroll protection plan program that everybody signed on for during the COVID, when the government was shut down. We're finding fraud. And I think fraud has to be uncovered, and the bad actors pay back what they got. But, so I don't have that much of a problem with the IRS spending. However, the extra 87, any of those 87,000 agents that are there for weaponizing the IRS, obviously you can't be in favor of that.
Ken, and with us, Marty, what do you expect Friday with the jobs report? Anything crazy or no?
It's really interesting. This inflation is really an anomaly. When inflation goes up, unemployment's supposed to go down. I would expect the jobs report. I think they had the open postings were 9.6 million jobs out there that are posted and unfilled. I think that's going to come down a bit. I think businesses are going to withdraw the job hirings. I think there's going to be a slight increase in hirings. That's the conundrum that the Federal Reserve has to deal with. They're increasing interest rates, but jobs are being increased, and businesses are doing okay, whereas gross domestic product decreased. Was 3.2% increase last September. Now it's 1.1% increase, so it is coming down. The Fed's got a hard problem, but I don't think you're going to see dramatic job cuts. We're not seeing it. The interesting part is that consumers are still spending wildly. Consumer debt is up. It's up to over $17 trillion. So they're spending, and if consumers continue to spend, people are going to continue to at least maintain the workforce. So I don't see any significant job cuts, but I do see a reduction in the posted and unfilled jobs, though.
Should be interesting, though, the numbers, no question. Dr. Marty Cannon, what a job he does. For us, the director of socioeconomic policy right here on Long Island. Sir, stay well. We'll keep a watch on things. Look forward to the next time. How's that?
And you stay well as well, Jay. Always a pleasure to be with you.